Welcome, everybody, to the Slip Angle Podcast. I'm Abram Schmucker, recording alone tonight. Adam is at home with the family. This show is brought to you by FCP Euro, where every part you buy is guaranteed for life, and Apex Pro, basically data systems that we love and use regularly. Gen 2 is available out now, and I think I have one coming to me very soon. I'm very excited. And lastly, to the Patreons, the patrons, we love that you guys support our show, and we tried to say thanks by mailing everybody free T-shirts. So if you're interested in kind of the worst of the worst Slip Angle Podcast content and you like free T-shirts, maybe you should sign up for the Patreon. But today we have Jackie Ding and his... I guess crew chief Alex is
here.
Where they're in the truck and they're both driving back from California, and you guys had a very busy week. Busy, bookended by just unbelievable monotony because you drove from Chicago to California, and you did some stuff in California for a few days, and now you're driving back. So. What's happened in the last week?
We're not driving back. We're not even going home. We're going to Virginia.
Oh, no. What's in Virginia?
It's a NASA Hyperfest.
Oh, good grief.
We got invited. I know. We got invited to do Ultimate Track Car Challenge. And of course, this event that we will talk about a little shortly that happened in Long Beach, NASA Hyperfest, and Grid Life Road America, you know, one of our favorites. It just has to be back-to-back-to-back weekends. And, you know, any sane person would have said, we probably shouldn't do any, like, do those, like, in succession, because that's really bad for your mental health. Any normal person. Instead, we're doing all three, yes. Sorry.
So, you've had, or I guess this, I guess triple header, as it might be called, is not too different from what Andy Smedegaard and Robert Thorne did a few weeks ago. They did King of the Mountain, and then they did SCCA National Autocross, and then they did Grid Life Midwest back to back to back. I don't think that anyone went home.
Which is pretty crazy, yeah.
And Tom won a national championship. I think Robert placed third, and then they all came out and had fun at Midwest. So that was a busy week for them. And now here you are doing the same thing, but at different events.
Yeah. And kind of, you know, this time we get West Coast, we get East Coast, and we get Midwest with Road America. So this is truly the white triangle of America at this point.
Good grief. Yeah. So tell me about your weekend in Long Beach.
Long Beach has been one of the most incredible experiences of our life, I think. Ever since, starting with Loden, we were so lost. We had to pull three U-turns and backing up into a major street, like a six-lane, like traffic street, with a 44-foot trailer and a dually. Because we went down the wrong alleyway and realized that the track literally is a piece of the road that got blocked off.
So you literally could not go.
Yeah. And then the streets on either side is so tiny we couldn't fit it through. So we had to back it up into the, you know, blocking off six lane of road. Sorry, everybody. And then we pissed off a lot of good people in Long Beach. I'll say that much.
So eventually you get parked. Then what?
Yes. We get into the convention center. That's where we have a paddock with Global Timetech this time, which I thought was amazing because next to us was all the manufacturers who brought their toys out. You know, Hyundai was there, Honda was there, Acura was obviously there in force. And there we were, 20 cars, Global Time Attack, everybody's prepping their car with decent amount of space and super, super cool. Then you get to do the track walk, which, my God, you are actually sharing the track walk with IndyCar drivers and IMSA drivers where they're competing the same weekend.
That's cool.
That is awesome because we're looking at the corner. We're thinking, oh, this curb is kind of big, kind of crazy. And then Takuma Sato walks up next to us and start looking at the same corner, examining the same curb.
That's
and neat. Then you just realize, oh crap, it's Takuma Sato. Like, Should I say hi? Should I do anything?
Now, you know? was there any particular driver that you were kind of starstruck by, or like you just had to tell yourself? Was there any driver that you were particularly excited to see?
Do you mind repeating the question? We might need the technical difficulties.
Oh, sure. You know, like we're kind of around people all the time, but was there any particular driver where you were like, oh my God, that's so-and-so?
I think I always wanted to meet Scott McLaughlin, right? This guy is Australian VA supercar champion. He's a two-time or three-time champion at this point. And then he came over to US to do IndyCar, which to me was like, oh God, he's someone I watch on TV and now he's here. So his rookie season, won rookie of the year here at Long Beach. And then I didn't get to meet him here, but it was like I really wanted to. And we met kind of everybody else. Oh, and while doing the track walk, Alex got almost ran over by Kevin Magnussen driving a golf cart, which I found particularly funny.
That's awesome. Well, I saw a headline from the event. It was, you know, Romain Grosjean crashes Type R on, you know, lap or something. And maybe that was at Laguna a couple weeks ago, but I finally watched the clip of what happened.
Yes.
And he was pitting in. It looked like the car lost brakes and he just couldn't make the corner. It did not look like he was on track and lost control of the vehicle. So that was like some good clickbait. But
I have a very good story on that. A couple of our good friends went to get driver signatures and stuff, right? And one of them pulled out a Honda, like the postcard with a Civic Type R, and handed it to Romain Grosjean and Ed Jones, who were in the car at the time. And Romain just looked at the card and looked at the guy and said, I don't have very good memories of this car. And Ed Jones just lost it, started laughing, and said, I'm never riding with Romain again. And so they obviously knew about the joke, and they were fully in on it too. And it's just funny.
That's,
you know, once you, end of the day, they're regular guys too. So
you had, I think, because I didn't see a ton of coverage for the event, but I think you had three hot sessions on track. Is that right?
Yeah. Three hot sessions. Each were at most 15 minutes.
Okay.
That's across 3 days. So
every session, I mean, of course, every session counts, but that was like every session was really, really important. Walk me through the weekend.
As soon as Thursday was the kind of load in, everybody gets in. And Thursday evening, we had a very big congregation event where they brought a lot of the race cars out to the outlet mall right by the side of the track. And they kind of closed. By this stage, all the streets are closed. So police escort, you know, bringing us over. Everybody parked up. And then all there was kids, there was fans, there was music going on. And everybody was just hanging out, checking out the cars and people explaining, you know, we were parked next to GT3 cars and IMSA cars. And it was just cool sharing, like taking a look at their stuff and they're peeking over on our side and, you know, watching people's ankle get caught on wing end plates, you know how it is. Yeah, it's really, really cool. And that was the congregation event kind of to kick off the event. And then Friday morning came around, we're all getting ready for the main event, for trying to get ready to practice. It was pretty interesting because they sent a pace car out in front of us to do two laps to kind of act as a guide, right? Like, okay, show everybody the line, show everybody where we're supposed to go. And the pace car driver in the NSX decided, yeah, these guys must be Indy drivers, and went at it at full Indy pace. So for those two laps, I couldn't see the pace car. I couldn't see anybody in front of me because I was so lost. And I was like, where is everybody?
Was it a singular run group?
It was right around 20 cars.
Okay. So just one run group on track each day?
Well, the first 2 days, yes.
Yeah.
Just one group on track. Also, all 20 cars on track at the same time.
Now, with you know, with those cars, I think there were a lot of you know, really high end programs running at that Long Beach. Was the length of the track, did it make it work so that having 20 cars on track wasn't really a big deal?
It would have, but I think there were some traffic management issues, and I think I was slightly part of it for one of the days. And the leaders, I think Ferris, had trouble getting clean laps the first 2 days.
Got it.
So for the third day, they had to make a small format change They split the run groups up a little bit for a third day, but first day, second day, both days were kind of run like all 20 cars go out at the same time, giving your gaps, adhere to your gaps, and then go. So definitely fun because, wow, Long Beach. You're literally driving on street circuit and a shoreline drive. That stuff is bumpy. And then, you know, people are having braking issues because I think just going through the fast right-hander flat out, there's a lot of bumps and part of the brake pad knockbacks and stuff. But by the time we go into the parking braking zone and turn two, a lot of people lost confidence.
Sure.
So that's one of the things I was really, you know, trying to pay attention of is to tap the brakes before, you know, you go into a heavy braking zone, and that kind of kept us all good. So,
but if I remember your Instagram story, you had some trouble with your transponder or timing or something like that. What was the situation?
It was a bit gut wrenching because first day, you know, coming straight off, and then just doing some warm up laps, you know, feeling the track out. Well, used tires, so trying to put down a banker. And then first lap was a 31, trying to chase down JC Manet, who's an awesome Subaru driver. Really, really neat guy, a cool guy. And, you know, just trying to stay behind him. You know, he's kind of my leader. I'm following a little bit, trying to learn the lines and stuff. And then clicked out of 31 and then got it down to a 29.67. So I was pretty pleased about it. I thought, okay, you know, that puts us in the right ballpark. I come back, sorry, no time. Well, that's screwed because we only get three sessions, and my session one, I get no time. You know, that's put us on the back foot.
Did you learn what the issue was?
You know, from what I was explained to, right? They say GTA, Global Time Attack, or ICCA Pro in this case, they weren't the ones responsible for putting down the timing beam in this event because that's IndyCar. IndyCar is the main event. They do it. Right?
Sure.
And so for Formula cars, they put them super, super low because the car is super low, right?
Sure.
And for most of our event, you can put it on a Toho, you can put it slightly higher, and it's okay. So it turns out putting where my usual location is, we're putting it on a tow hook, is actually maybe a little too high. So it triggered on my warm-up lap, but it didn't trigger the lap counter when I was going full speed, blowing by the timing beam on the actual time lapse.
That's peculiar. Given my understanding of the timing loops, I think that's peculiar. But part of the reason that I ask is because Grid Life got skewered by a prominent YouTuber about how he handled a timing and transponder incident. And the scenario at Midwest was similar. A key difference was a driver was able to provide data from an AIMSOLO, and that time was counted because the transponder was malfunctioning, I suppose. So it had battery life. It was showing and should have recorded clicks across the timing beacon, but didn't. And I conferred with Renee about how I wanted to handle it. And because this driver could prove with the solo that they had recorded said time, they were able to, on their last session, were able to have that time be official because it was a Grid Life rented transponder that didn't work. And so I allowed that, and there was another driver that was displaced, and they were very unhappy.
Oh, I've seen enough of the ensued storm, shall we say, right, that followed. Let me repeat kind of my position on this one, right? In this scenario, in our scenario for Long Beach, right, Global Time Attack ended up disallowing my time because they said, well, your transponder shows a 148. The next couple of time lapse was not recorded. So we cannot give you that time. However, we will honor your 129 data lap and place you in grid in that position.
Yeah. So I think that that's generally a pretty fair compromise. It just so happened that in our scenario, the fast lap was recorded on the last session. And so, you know, it would have been a crummy situation all around. And I think the challenge was, if it was in this case, a Grid Life transponder that had failed, to tell a driver that, well, that's their problem, not GridLife's problem. That's, to me, that felt unfair. And so I was just like, well, someone's going to be unhappy in this situation, but the best we can do is kind of be fair to as many people as possible. So I'm excited that you basically got regridded at least to make an opportunity for session two. But session two didn't go your way.
Of course. I think in that previous situation, right, like you couldn't handle it either way. And either way, someone would be mad. So I think let's just leave it at that. And then in session two, you know, suddenly transponder, we've remounted much lower, and that's working now, except the car started having issues. So, you know, one of the issues we've been having kind of slightly all year was part of the charge pipe system, which, you know, on a higher boost car, I think a lot of people have had issues. Ended up being just a coupler adapter that is slightly too short with a bead roll that isn't quite enough. So under high boost, under high temps, it would start blowing out. So for day two, obviously, I was kind of pretty keen, trying to put down a hot one. So I put the car into our max kill, overkill map, and try to go for it. On data, compared to my 29-second lap from the previous day, we were up 2.2 seconds by turn eight, where it was like the very tight right-hander going into the back straight right before the Formula D section. And unfortunately, right there and then, it blew out. So didn't get to record that lap time, which kind of bummed me out, but I came back into the pits. I was pretty trusting the team to be able to fix it. They got it done, no problem. And on my next attempt lap, even on a lower boost map, it still blew out after the heat and the stress had gone in. So being 13 minutes, you don't really get a second chance. So we kind of had to just call it for day two. So that's when the pressure really started amping up, because two out of three sessions has gone by and we're still sitting at no time.
Man, that's intense. So on Saturday night, you work on getting the car fixed. I think you got parts from a shop in California. What's your mindset? How do you prepare yourself for Sunday, given that you only have one shot left?
It was tricky because first off, you know, we had to try to fix the car. So one of the first thing we do is go right to our sponsor and good friends at Evasive Motorsport. Dai Yoshihara has been really like a really good friend of mine since we first battled in S2000 way back in like 2018 Buttonwillow, I think. It was the first time we did battle, and he's like, oh, you drive really fast. And then, you know, no, and I said, Dai, no, you drive even faster. And, you know, that's kind of when the friendship began. And that kind of led to, now Alex is laughing, I know. But Evasive has been a really good sponsor too. And they've been helping out, and they took a look at the pipe and said, hey, we have extra. We can make you some at our shop. So they sent the fabricator back to the shop Saturday afternoon, got it done, and then gave it to us. And then we installed it, and fingers crossed, that was it. I think Saturday night and Sunday morning was probably just a pure stress mode, because, you know, our last few trips to California have not been kind. Every single time that we go, there's always some niggling problem.
Yeah, it's like the California curse, like the guys at Pro Awesome have.
Exactly. Like, everybody go to California, and every time you have issues. In 2018, I had two rear wings come off the car.
I remember.
Right? Yeah, you remember. Yeah. Well, 2019 was the first year of the Supra, and, you know, nobody turned more than three laps because of traction control issues. You know, we figured that out. Then 2020, we were, you know, very confident going in, let's do battle. And then our car had issues, and we only ran one lap. That was a wastegate issue. To this day, it was a phantom issue. AMS got the car back, took it apart, took the turbo apart, put it back together, and it went away.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah, so we never figured out why. And you can understand our stress building up to it, that, oh my God, this weekend has gone to crap. You know, it's just this curse is continuing. And, you know, you just get the sinking feeling that maybe something is going to happen again. And it's just the worst thing is going to happen. We're going to get just oil or something, or black flag, and our session's gonna be ruined. And it's hard not to get into that negativity cycle, you know?
So, sure.
Yeah. So, but all I could do was try to focus on myself. One of the things I found really useful was position advanced, they have some simulation rigs set up right next to us, our paddock grid. So what we always do is right before I jump in the car for going out for actual session, I do like 6-9 laps in their car, just run the course, get through my motions, find my marks, get in the rhythm, and then warm myself up. You know, I feel like that was really, really big to my ability to perform on the spot. So again, Sunday morning comes around, I did that on their simulation rig. They were super helpful. They offered that for free for all the competitors to use. So I kind of took full advantage of it. And Sunday morning just went on the grid. Yeah.
So you go out and you start your hot session on Sunday. What?
Yep.
How many hot laps did you do? Did you get that magic lap on the first one, or did it take a few attempts?
I have to say, like Sunday morning, even in the car, I never felt that kind of pressure before. It's like 5 years worth of California curse weighing on the shoulder, right? And then I was breathing so heavily in the helmet visor that it just keep fogging up. So every single warm up, every corner, I gotta like pull it open and wipe it on the warm up lap just to be able to see where I'm going, and then come around, you know, fast, flat out, crossing the start finish, starting the flying lap. I already breathed so hard I couldn't see anywhere. So there we go. We got to deal with it. And then just one corner at a time. Just, I know the car can do it. We've seen it on data. It's got to be there. Hit your marks, brake early, rotate the car, get on power, no mistakes. And first lap comes around. I squint as a flying full throttle past the finish line, 27.6, I think. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. But I think I can get more. Because right as I was leaving the paddock on the warm-up lap, Alex was calling me through the phone. He said, tire pressure is a bit low, and then the track temperature is pretty low. So give it a couple laps, you know, warm it up real nice. So second lap, it felt even better. I cleaned up some spots, and then that was a magical one, 27.2. And it's definitely rare for me, because usually, you know, it's one lap, and then you shut the car down, you know, you're done. But for this one, specifically for reliability reasons, we ran the car in low boost to try and prevent another coupler blowing out like it did the day before. And because we know the car had it, we just kind of do a 27 and know it should be pretty safe. But yeah, it was kind of worked out in the end. So,
well, so the last time I had you on the show and talked to you was at the beginning of this season, and you had started what at the time looked to be an absolutely insane annual campaign. I think you had close to 20 events scheduled for this year. Yep. The development on the Supra, I think, has matured quite a lot. I mean, I think you're at a point now where probably you're not going to do very much. It's a really, really good car for a bunch of classes. It's remarkably reliable for what it is, and it's very, very fast. You brought a new car to your shop, PhD Racing, and have been driving that car at a lot of events this year as well. What made you want to choose that car? Tell everyone what it is and what you want to do with it.
Which one? We bought quite a couple cars lately, so I can't. Is it a Tesla that we're talking about now?
We're talking about.
Yeah, sorry. Tesla first. So Tesla's, you know, everybody knows it. Everybody has an opinion on it. Some loves it, some hate it. You know, it's such a polarizing platform. And even in this polarizing platform, within this fan base, yeah, polarizing splits between factions, if you like. You have some of the guys who like Unplugged, some of the guys who like Mountain Pass, and everybody hate each other. It's just kind of like, it's a very, very intense situation. And we went in kind of with an open mind saying, okay, I just want to see if a Tesla that you can buy from dealership, showroom, so on, that you can you actually go out to a racetrack, drive, you know, some laps, and go home and have a fun time, and even compete in time attack and so on. And that was kind of the R&D, the research purpose, the thesis, if you like. So far, I'm at a you kind of can, but there's a big asterisk, a couple asterisks next to it, you know. So
talk about those. I think the first event I remember you bringing it to was Autobahn. And at the time, you ran it on Saturday, I think, in a 100% stock configuration, but maybe with some tires.
No, Saturday was bone stock, no tires.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure that the listeners can appreciate that Brake pads and tires go an awful long way for any car that you plan to take on track.
Absolutely. We didn't do any of those yet. We wanted to see how it was like without any of those.
Pure form from factory.
And the answer was it lasted two laps. Or more specifically, the brakes lasted two laps. Fundamentally, the Tesla is a heavier car, right? But the bigger, more pressing problem was it didn't have a differential. And with a Model S, well, Model 3 performance, it's an all-wheel drive car. So you have a drive unit at the front and a drive unit at the rear, which are not, you know, connected to each other. But when you're adding a lot of steering input and going on throttle, the front motor is trying to put a lot of torque down, and it's an open diff. And so it wants to light up the inside front. And so it defaults to Tesla stability control system, which, you know, brake vectoring, if you like. And it roasts that brake pad. So by the time you go into the next braking zone, you got no brake pads. That was the biggest issue. So on stream, it actually got captured where we are trying to slow down for the heavy braking zone on the back straight. And you can literally see smoke and fire within the front right tire.
Not
that awesome from where I was sitting, but certainly a spectacle. So just I was appreciative of the live stream angle that, you know, actually backed up what I was feeling in the car. But, you know, so day one, even with the suboptimal setup, we ended up, I think it was P3 overall in like a semi-dry kind of track condition, which I was pretty surprised and pretty happy about. But, you know, we knew other people had faster cars, especially when the tracks started getting better on Sunday. So.
Yeah, that was, I think, an interesting event because I don't remember who finished second, but it was, I think it was Tony Barber in his Model 3 that finished first in street class. Is that right?
Yep. And then Kyo, I think, got second. And then there was an Evo 9 and an Evo 10. I think Kyo's Evo 9 might have finished second, just pipped the Evo 10 by like a fraction. And then we were fourth or fifth, I think.
I see.
Just off the podium.
Yeah, so like... I'm sure one of the bigger challenges at an event like that is just ensuring that you have power to charge a vehicle between sessions. One of the cool things about a lot of the tracks that we go to is many of them have 50 amp RV power, which is, I don't think, the absolute perfect charging platform for the vehicle, but it's still pretty good.
It helps. For sure it helps. Gingerman RV charging had a little bit of issue for us because apparently there was some sort of a safety trigger, and every time we try to plug the Tesla into the RV plug, it would trip it. Which means we couldn't use it. But there was inside the tower, there was a dedicated Tesla charger, and then I think there was another one by where the staff RV spots were. That's what Adam told us. So it was between Tony and I, who in the last recent Grid Life Midwest event, we would just share charging duties, and you become really good friends or really, you know, fierce enemies with, you know, your rival who's trying to share this charging port with you. So, you know, you deliberately and, you know, intentionally leave the car on the charging station for like that little bit longer so you can't get the full charge. I did not. Okay, we're a very nice friend. I'm just saying you could.
Oh boy.
I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying you could.
So you're going to UTCC here this weekend, followed by Road America. Are you taking the Supra to Road America, or are you going to be driving the Tesla?
Yep, Supra will be going to Supra will be going to Road America.
Excellent.
That track will I'm hoping for a big show. I hope Sean Kresbach has got the Evo ready. That will be a fun one. I'm sure. I hope Dewey finally gets Boogeyman, trained up and temper sorted.
Now, I think I remember. Forgive me if these times are wrong. He did 2 years ago. Dewey did a 22. Is that right?
22 or 21. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. So with the development that we've seen on all these cars, sub 20 should be, should be almost like a foregone conclusion. Would you agree?
I'm going to lie to you. I think we're going for 17s and below. It's that good.
Someone and I were talking, I can't remember who it was, that the lap times, even though the tracks are completely different, the lap times between Road America and Coda are very similar.
Something like that. I think so.
So
I think one of the, what we've been comparing actually is GT4 times. So we usually look at either Pirelli World Challenge or IMSA, IMSA GS class. Their times and our times has been really remarkably similar. So at Coda, our time would have put us either P1 or P2 on the IMSA GS class grid. Same, very similar with Road Atlanta times. At Long Beach, we were about half a second off Spencer Pompelli's 718 GT4 overall record in GT4 class, half a second off of it. So that's kind of our benchmark lately. So every time we go to, okay, this track, what's the GT4 record? Let's see if we can get close to it.
That's so cool.
Right?
And it's a car that's registered and can be driven on the street.
Yep.
It has been subpoenaed for ice cream before, which I think is amazing. And I love,
try again?
I love that you you kind of took it in stride. And not only that, you went to get ice cream and then you went up Pikes Peak.
Yes, we did. I still have that little like a pamphlet they give you for when you go up Pikes Peak.
And that's probably a memory that you'll have like forever. Yeah. What a cool event.
It was really cool because it was us. It was Ben Thorne with the Civic and Chris Sullivan, our good photographer, with his S2000. I shot that on Instagram with his Datsun 510. We're all trying, and he was trying to pass us to get to the front of the row to get rolling shots. And this is almost all the way to the peak. And I'm in the Tesla looking over, and it was him and his son rocking the car back and forth up this hill on the opposite lane, trying to pass all three race cars, trying to get to the top with what I can only describe as 15 horsepower. It was amazing, and we loved it. Yeah,
that's such an incredible experience. So, if the car holds together at Road America and everything kind of goes according to plan, is that the end of the season, or are there things even after that you've got to prepare for?
It is not the end of the season. For some reason, how it's not the end of the season, I don't know. But we're planning to go to SECA Time Trial National Tour, Road Atlanta.
Okay.
And this time we're going to compete in an unlimited class instead of the Max One class that we competed at the NCM event when there was the actual TT Nationals event.
Okay.
This way we can run the full Aero, full Monty, and then throw some really wide 315s and then can see our ones on it.
Okay.
And I want to see what we can do. I want to see if we can go even quicker than a 26.5. Yeah.
I'd have to imagine you could. Now, your car, you don't really have an aero setup necessarily for like a true unlimited car. Are you going to run what you have, or is there something else in development for an unlimited campaign?
The beauty and the essence of the TA90 program TA90 is always been a wordplay on Time Attack and the A90. But somehow some people just took it as, oh, the Toyota A90, that's the TA90, which is cool. People refer to their A90s and TA90 these days, and I thought that was just pretty cool. We managed to change Toyota's marketing program to fit our own bill.
Nice.
But the cool thing about this is it's always been bolt-on. It's always been as, you can do this too. You know, if you need this, you can make your Supra as fast as this one, and it doesn't take that much. The only thing that I would say is custom fabricated on this car is... The aero pieces you can buy. The only thing that you need to fabricate is the mounting.
Sure.
And really the custom spec damper, which we can get you anyway.
Sure.
And that's it. And everything else is off the shelf parts. You know, a tune you can get from AMS, turbo kit you can get from AMS, suspension from Eibach, Reinhardt, SPL parts, Titan 7 wheels, Nankai or Yokohama AO52s. You can get all of those things.
Well,
put together a Supra just as fast. Yeah,
it's easy to say that, maybe all of this was part of the plan. But when you started development on the first Supra, did you know that the car's performance ceiling was going to be as high as it has been? It's like for being a the car is very specialized, and it's a one of a kind build. But you're right that many of the parts are things that you can now just go buy. There aren't very many Time Attack cars that can do that and go that fast.
I agree.
And you're still running the stock engine and the stock transmission and the stock
valve cover,
all of those things is really,
really
cool.
Valve cover to oil pan. Yeah. I describe it as valve cover to oil pan never came apart.
I think that's just incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, like my perfect example is, you know, we have customers out now in Australia, Jonathan, I'll just name first names, and then another one in California, Will, who's been running Thunder Hill. They've been setting records with a stock 2021 Supra, no tune, but with just all the bolt-on parts that, you know, we recommend.
Sure. That's awesome. Well, I think with that, we're probably going to conclude this episode with Jackie Ding. Really, really impressive this year. Awesome campaign. The cars really come together. The team has really matured. Really high level talent, you know, high caliber program. If you're in the Chicagoland area and you're interested in doing Time Attack, you should definitely pay attention to the content that that Jackie produces for YouTube. And also reach out to the PhD Racing Lab, because I think they have a track record of success here within GridLife and within other series. And we just love those guys to death. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at GridLife to say hello.